he'd had his problems in writing Fenway through the years, and while Lem never said anything to me, I just figured he wanted Reggie fully in his comfort zone and his mind on hitting. Right field at Fenway Park is trickier than most parks. If you ask me, it's the toughest right field in the American League because of the contour of the wall that wraps around from the pesky pole at 302 feet in the right field corner to as deep as 380 feet in the right center bullpen area. All of it only about 5 feet high, which means the fans are right on top of you. And on cloudless sunny days, as Monday, October 2nd, 1978 was shaping up to be, right field at Fenway can be downright treacherous on fly balls, especially line drives, once the sun makes its rise above that grandstand. The air in the clubhouse was businesslike as we dressed for this final battle with our arch rivals, absent the customary in-house verbal hijinks that during the season provided both tension-reducing levity for us and entertainment for the writers. We'd been through so much to get to this point, overcome so much adversity, that now it was time for fulfillment. We didn't look at it as do or die. We looked at it as do. We just didn't know how it would be done. No one could have ever foreseen it was getting done with Bucky Dent's bat and my glove. The only world championship ring I wear is from 1977, but that's because it was the first one for me. Without a doubt, however, the most fun season of my life was 1978. We had perhaps the most balanced lineup of professional hitters in baseball, perfectly suited for Yankee Stadium. Lefty power in Reggie, Greg Nettles and Chris Chambliss for that short right field fence, and high average right-handed gap hitters in Thurman Munson, Willie Randolph, and myself, who each took advantage of the stadium's vast left-center field. Roy White, a versatile switch hitter, could hit second, sixth, or seventh, and at the top of the lineup, we had the speed of Mickey Rivers. And starting out in 78, we had a rotation of Catfish Hunter, a future Hall of Famer. Don Gullett, my roommate, who'd been the ace of the 1976 Big Red Machine Cincinnati Reds. Ed Figueroa, who'd won 51 games over the previous three seasons and would go on to win 20 in 78. And Ron Guidry, who in 1978 had one of the greatest seasons of any pitcher in history, leading the majors with a 25-3 record and a 1.74 ERA. Over the winter, George Steinbrenner, taking a page from Noah about having two of everything, signed Goose Gossage, one of the premier closers in the National League, to team up with their own Sparky Lyle, who'd only been the American League Cy Young Award winner in 77. So this was a well-constructed, championship-caliber baseball team, with few weaknesses, a team of pressure-tested players who knew how to win. It's understandable, though, if Yankees fans weren't so sure of that during the first half of 78 and began harboring serious doubts about the team's ability to repeat as world champions. We started off losing four of our first five games, and Goose especially had a rough period of adjustment, coming in as he did as the designated co-closer with Sparky, who was one of the most popular players on the team. It didn't help either that Goose and Billy got off on the wrong foot in spring training when Goose refused Billy's order to throw deliberately at the Texas Rangers' Billy Sample, and the two never mended fences. In his first game as a Yankee, Goose came up the loser on opening day in Texas when he gave up a ninth-inning homer to Richie Zisk. He blew the save and gave up three more runs in three innings against the Brewers in his next game, 5 days later. Then, a week after that, he was completely demoralized when he threw away a sacrifice bunt by the Blue Jays' Dave McKay to let in the winning run in the ninth inning in Toronto. After that game, we watched in silence as poor Goose sat at his locker crying. Years later, we're having a couple of beers after an old-timer's day game at Yankee Stadium, and Goose, seemingly still hurting, could not forget how absolutely devastating those first couple of weeks had been for him. They gave me Sparky's job on a silver platter, and what do I do but start off with the worst stretch of my entire career, he said. They always talk about the 78 Yankees and the great comeback. Well, it wouldn't have been a great comeback if it hadn't been for me. But the beauty of that team was that, in the face of disaster, they'd be laughing like kids on a little league field. After that awful game in Toronto in which I threw that damn bunt 20 feet into the stands or wherever, I'm collapsed in my locker, my head buried in my uniform top, and I look up and who's standing right in front of me but Catfish, who said, "Hurry up and get dressed now, we're taking you out to dinner." From that point on, I realized what a special group you guys were. They knew how to cut the tension.